almost 2.5 years ago, I started working on a study on heaven, and it took me quite a while, and I finished it up quite some time ago, and I had intended to preach it a long while ago, and then just one thing came up after another, and there was sermons and series that I wanted to cover, but we're finally here. I finally want to start into this series today. It's not going to be too long, probably, I'd say, better part of a year or so, something like that. So, and I'm not kidding, because I do have 92 pages of outline, and you probably are wondering how in the world I'm going to talk about heaven, something that we know next to nothing about, so people assume anyway. How am I going to talk about that for almost a year, given that the Bible hardly says anything about it, is what most people think anyway. The Bible actually has a lot to say about it. And so what I want to do is I want to go through the table of contents in the outline to give you an idea of all the things that we're going to cover in this series. The first thing that I want to talk about, and that will be today and next Sunday, it's going to be basically an introduction. We're really not going to get to heaven yet, but we're going to talk about how you get there, and that's talking about dying, right? I want to talk about and remind you all that we're all going to die. And that we need to prepare ourselves for it before we can talk about heaven. Then I want to talk about what is heaven, why study heaven, the most important reasons that we should look forward to heaven, or the most important reason, singular, that we should look forward to heaven. I want to answer the objection that doesn't the Bible say that we can't know anything about heaven? Because the people think this, and then they use 1 Corinthians 2:9, which is the eye hath not seen nor ear heard what God has prepared for them that love him. And people say, well, you know, the Bible says you can't even know anything about heaven, so why would we even try to know something that God hasn't revealed? So I'm going to answer that objection. I want to talk about a faulty understanding of heaven, because a lot of people just out there in the world, if you ask them what their perception of heaven is, it's some fat little baby sitting on a cloud strumming a harp, right? I mean, that's kind of what most people think. You're going to be sitting on a cloud strumming a harp for all eternity or something. So we're going to talk about faulty understandings of heaven. We're going to look at the present heaven versus the eternal heaven. The eternal heaven is the new earth. Okay, so there's a big difference between those two things. The place that you go when you die versus the place that you'll spend eternity are two different places. And we'll talk about that extensively in this series. I want to look at some basic facts about heaven, and I want to look at the nature of the new earth, the eternal heaven. And then I want to spend the rest of the time answering questions about heaven, both about the present heaven and the eternal heaven. And I have 60 of them so far, and many of them were submitted by you. If you'll remember, a couple of years ago or so, I asked you to give me your questions that you had about heaven and the afterlife. So a lot of these questions were submitted by you. Some of them I came up with on my own. And then a number of them I got out of Randy Alcorn's book called Heaven. And I've quoted from him quite a bit in this study. It was a good book. And I learned quite a bit about from it. And so some of the questions that he covered, I'm also going to cover. All right, so the questions are, where is heaven? Who is going to heaven? How many people will be in heaven? Do babies go to heaven when they die? Did people who died before Jesus came go to heaven? What happens at death? When one of God's own dies, does he enter the new heaven and the new earth? Is the valley of death a literal, actual place, or is it just symbolic? Does heaven really have pearly gates with St. Peter? Will we be judged immediately after death or at the final judgment at the resurrection? And that's a question that I've long pondered, and I think I finally have a good answer for you on that one. But does the judgment happen as soon as we die and go to heaven, or do we wait until the resurrection? Let's see, where was I? I lost my spot. What happens with people who are not God's children immediately upon dying? Will the very flesh of reprobates writhe in agony in eternal damnation? Somebody asked the question. It wasn't me, so we'll answer that one too. Where does the soul of the reprobate go at death? Have people died and gone to heaven and come back? Right, that's a common thing that we hear a lot about today. People dying, going to heaven, and then coming back and telling people what it was like and what they saw. Atheists dying and going to heaven and seeing their grandmother and coming back and becoming Christians and all this stuff. And, I see this headlines about that. There have been books written on it and talk shows and all this stuff. It's very, very popular. We're going to talk about that. If a person is, quote, dead, unquote, and the doctor resuscitates him, did his soul depart and then return? That's an interesting question. In what form will we be when we get to heaven, body or spirit? Another good question. And there's some controversy about that as well. Will we have a body in heaven, in the present heaven, in the current heaven? Will we have a body? I'm going to talk about that. There is, like I said, quite a bit of theological controversy over that one. What age will we be in heaven? If you die at 95, are you going to be 95 for all eternity? If you die one day after conception, are you going to be a four-celled person for all eternity? If you died at 1 year old, are you going to be a baby for all eternity? All right, so what age will we be in heaven? What sex will we be in heaven? There are some people that believe that we're all going to be men. Men and women here will all be men in heaven. People believe that. We're going to look at that question. Is the present heaven a physical place? Is it an actual, is there like physical things there? Is it all just spiritual and all, you know, that metaphysical? Will there be time in heaven? Will there be day and night in heaven? Will we not sleep or need to sleep in the new earth? What is life like in the present heaven? What will we do in heaven? That's a common question that everybody has. What are we going to do there? We'll talk about that. And then as part of that question, I'll answer the question, will we spend all eternity only worshiping and singing and praising God? Is it going to be nothing but an endless church service? And then I'll look at some of the things that we will do, like worship God, serve God, rest, work, build houses, eat, drink, enjoy time with each other, learn about God. All of those things we'll do in heaven. Next question, will we interact one-on-one with God? Which is an interesting question, because there's one God and there's millions or billions of his elect. Are we going to have any one-on-one time with God, or is it just, you know, we might see him once every 100,000 years or so and that's it? To what extent do those in heaven enjoy it currently? Will we continue to learn in heaven? Will we continue to pray in heaven? What does our behavior in this life affect what we do or where we live in heaven? Will there be governments in heaven? Will there be a hierarchy of authority? Once we are in heaven, can we work to improve our station? Will we have jobs and work in heaven? Will there be money in heaven? That's an interesting question. Because if you don't have money, it's kind of hard to conduct commerce and things. And if you build things, is it just still going to be all barter? Or will there be money there? That's an interesting question. At least for me, because I'm interested in economics and things like that. Will there be technology on the new earth, such as cars, computers, electronics, things like that? Will we be able to fly in heaven? And I don't mean in spacecraft or something, but will our bodies be able to fly? Another interesting question. Will there be animals in heaven? Will we eat in heaven? And if so, what will we eat in heaven? And, extremely important question, will we eat meat in heaven? And another very, very important question. Will there be coffee on the new earth? I have some answers for you on that. And a bit of a sensitive topic, but will we defecate in heaven? I mean, it's worth thinking about it, isn't it? Will we defecate in heaven? And I've got some interesting stuff about that too. What language will we speak in heaven? You ever think about that? Will we be married in heaven? Will there be sex in heaven? How about hugs? Will there be family ties in heaven? Husband, wife, brother, sister, parent, child? Will we know people from this life in heaven? So when you get there, and people that you knew here, that are obviously that are God's elect, are you going to know them there? Will we just automatically know everyone in heaven? So will you get there and all God's elect from all times and places, will you just automatically know everybody? Can people in heaven and hell communicate with each other, like appears to be the case in Luke 16:19-31 with the story of Lazarus and the rich man? Will we be sad for those who are in hell? Will we remember people in our lives on earth? So when you get there, are you going to remember what happened down here? Are you going to remember the events of your life? Are you going to remember people that were in your life? Or is your memory just going to be wiped clean and you're all going to start over? Will we know what is going on down on earth? So when we get there, are we going to know the events that are happening down here while we're up there? Another good question. How can it be heaven if we are aware of bad things happening on earth? So I kind of answered the previous question with the next question. So if we do know about bad things happening down here, is it still heaven? Will there be a literal new earth? Will heaven be like what earth was before the fall? What will the new earth be like? What will the new Jerusalem be like? Is heaven a giant city, or is there countryside as well? Will there be nations on the new earth? After the resurrection, will we live in heaven or in the new earth? Where will God be? Is he going to be in heaven or on the new earth? Are we going to see the Heavenly Father and the Holy Spirit in spirit or in flesh? What will our resurrected bodies be like? Will we have scars on our resurrected bodies, which we have on our current bodies? And lastly, what does it mean, quote, I will give to eat of the bread of life, Revelation 2:7. So those are the 60 questions, and that's why it's going to take me probably a year to get through all this, because there's a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of stuff to think about, isn't there? But like I said, before we get to heaven, we have to die first. So let's talk about dying. I think it's important before we talk about heaven and the afterlife, we need to come to grips with the fact that we are all going to die. And that's a good thing. If you're a Christian, it should be a good thing. If you fear death, if you dread death, if you look at death as a bad thing, you need to get your mind straightened out because you're not thinking biblically. Paul said to die, to live is Christ and to die is gain. He said that he was in a strait betwixt two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better, but to remain in the flesh is needful for you, for the church, that is. So dying is not a bad thing. It's a sad thing for people you leave behind. It's a painful thing for those who die. In many cases, and it's also emotionally painful for others. But for a Christian, death is a good thing. It's a blessing. To die is to lose life, cease to live, suffer death to expire, or to be, what's the word with the dinosaurs, extinct. I remember I was getting some blood work done one time by this, and this nurse asked me, it was in the military, and if I had life insurance or something, and who I wanted the beneficiary to be at the time when I go extinct. And that's the word she used. She was, couldn't think of the word when you were extinct. And I thought that was pretty funny. So anyway, and then death is the act or fact of dying, the end of life, the final cessation of the vital functions of an animal or plant. And that's going to happen to all of us. We're all going to die if Christ doesn't return first. So one of two, you are going to experience one of two things. This is an absolute guarantee. Every single person in this room will experience one of two things. Either you're going to die or you're going to see Christ return. There's no other option. One of those two. Now, some people won't die. Some people will be here when Christ comes back in 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 15. 1 Thessalonians 4:15, "For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent them which are asleep." So there will be some alive and remain when Christ returns. They will have made it through the difficult time at the end. They will be probably in that camp of the saints that is surrounded by the devil and the armies of the world when Christ comes back at the last moment and fire from heaven falls and destroys them all. So there will be some that make it to the end. The rest of us will go the way of all the earth. And this phrase is used at least twice in the Bible. The first place is back in Joshua 23 and verse 14. And this just shows you that this is the end of all men. This is the way all the earth goes. Not just men, either. Animals, plants, every living thing has a lifespan. We all live for a while and flourish for a while, and then we wither up and die. Joshua 23 and verse 14, Joshua says, "And behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth." That's another way of saying that he's going to die, and we can see that from 1 Kings 2 and verse 2. Just do a little Bible study here just to show you what this phrase, "going the way of all the earth," refers to. 2 Kings 2, 1 Kings, pardon me, 1 Kings 2, 1 through 2. 1 Kings 2, 1 through 2. "Now the days of David drew nigh that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man." I just like that phrase, "going the way of all the earth." Way years ago, when I was in Cincinnati, one of the families in the church, their computer died, and they didn't have email or anything. And so they asked me to send out an email to the rest of the church telling them that they wouldn't be available, you know, by email for a while. And when I wrote, I said that their computer had gone the way of all the earth. And, you know, just kind of a neat way of saying it. Solomon tells us in Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 2 that there is a time to die. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 2. There's a time for everything. A time to be born and a time to die, he says. A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. We've all had our time to be born, and we will all have our time to die unless we make it until Christ comes back. And no man can avoid death no matter how hard he tries. And there are people out there that try really hard. There are people that have dedicated their whole lives and whole industries to trying to make men live either longer or forever. That's a big thing these days. The whole transhumanist movement is about trying to either live longer, like way longer than you're supposed to live, or even forever. These people want to. They want to upload your mind, your thoughts, your memories into the cloud on the internet so that you can live eternally on this earth. I'm not kidding you. This is what these weirdos want to do. And they want to physically live forever, too. And they're pursuing all these technologies of 3D printing organs and things like that to try to replace your body parts as they go bad and to allow you to live forever. That, to me, is a definition of torture, if you ask me. But anyway, you can't avoid it, no matter how much money you have, no matter how hard you try. Look at Psalm 89 and verse 45. Eat all the organic foods you want. Eat all the fresh fruits and vegetables you want. Take all the supplements you want. Go to the doctor once a day if you need to. Whatever you want to do, take all their pills, all their pharmaceuticals, and whatever. Do anything that you can possibly think of. Exercise for 23 and a half hours a day. Whatever you want to do, and guess what? You're going to die. And chances are, you know when you're going to die? Between 70 and 80. You know why that is? Because that's what God says is going to happen to the majority of people. Every once in a while, you know, people live up into their 90s, and some people live, you know, up into their hundreds. But for the most part, no matter what you do, you're going to live 70 to 80 years. You could make yourself miserable trying to live longer than that, or you could just accept the fact and enjoy your life and not be extreme about everything that you do. That's just my advice, but do as you like. Psalm 89 and verse 48. What man is he that liveth and shall not see death? Shall he deliver his soul from the hand of the grave? Selah. That is what you call a rhetorical question. Two of them there. What man is he that liveth and shall not see death? Answer is none. Nobody's going to live and not see death. Shall he deliver his soul from the hand of the grave? Not a chance. Not a chance. Doesn't matter what you do. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't exercise, that we shouldn't eat well. I do those things myself. And try to give yourself a decent quality of life while you're here. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a good idea. But to try to extend your life, I've said it before, but I just find it so sad. I mean, when I hear about people diagnosed with terminal cancer or something, and I'm going to fight it till the end and take all the chemo, radio, whatever. And it's like, man, give it up. I mean, you just got diagnosed with terminal cancer. I mean, I just don't understand this hanging on and clinging to life no matter what. And it's just weird. But I guess we're in a post-biblical, post-Christian society, and that's how people think today. A lot of them anyway. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 8. It says, there is no man that hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit, neither hath he power in the day of death, and there is no discharge in that war. Neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it. No man has power over the spirit to retain the spirit. That's referring to death. Because remember, it says, as the body is without the spirit, so faith without works is dead. As the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead, James tells us. And we remember Rachel, Jacob's wife, when she was giving birth to Benjamin. And it says when her soul was in departing, for she died, right? That's what happens. When your soul and your spirit departs your body, it dies. The soul and the spirit is the life principle, the life-giving principle of your body. And when it's gone, the body's dead. No man has power over that. You cannot retain that thing no matter how hard. You could try to grasp onto it and not let it go. It's not going to work. When your time is up, it's up. And there's no discharge in that war. You're going to fight the war of death. It's going to be your last battle. And guess what? You're going to lose. You're going to, I mean, if you look at it from an earthly, temporal standpoint, you're going to lose. If you look at it from a Christian standpoint, you're going to win, because to die is gain. Remember Paul said that? There's no discharge, though. I'm going to say, well, I've got a, whatever they used to call those things in the army where you had a, you know, some kind of a ailment or something, and you get discharged. You're not going to get discharged. You're going to fight this last battle, unless you happen to be one that lives until the second coming of Christ. We're told in Hebrews 9 and verse 27 that it is appointed unto us to die. That's a really important word there, appointed. I'll define it for you here in a moment. Hebrews 9 and verse 27 says, for as it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this, the judgment. It's appointed, which means fixed by agreement, settled beforehand, fixed by authority, ordained. Who do you suppose appointed you to die? Who made that appointment for you? It's the judge of all the earth. It's the Lord God Almighty. He appointed, he fixed ahead of time the time that you're going to die. And people don't like to talk about that. Some people, a lot of people don't like to talk about this. They don't like to think about it, especially people of the world. But there's a lot of even Christian people out there that they just don't want to talk about or think about death. And I just find that very sad. And that's why I think it's important to preach about these things. I know I've covered this before. I did two sermons on facing death maybe within the last couple of years. And I've talked about this before. But I think in, like I said, a post-Christian world, this needs talked about, because people are afraid of it, and they're living in la la land. It's really sad when I see people diagnosed with cancer and they don't even want to talk about their pending death. It's like, come on, grow up. I mean, I don't understand it. So people need to hear this. We have an appointed time on this earth. Job 7 and verse 1. Job 7 and verse 1. Job 7 and verse 1, it says, "Oh, remember that my life is wind." That's how short it is. So we'll get to that near the end of the sermon. "Remember that my life is wind. Mine eye shall no more see good." Job 7 and verse 1. That's really interesting that that verse actually had to do with what I was talking about, which is but not at all what I wanted to read. But we will get to a verse that says our life is wind here in a minute. But Job 7 and verse 1 says, "Is there not an appointed time to man upon earth? Are not his days also like the days of an hireling?" Again, more rhetorical questions. And you start reading through the Bible, you'll notice that there are a lot of rhetorical questions. The answer to this is obvious. Is there not an appointed time to man upon the earth? Yes, there is. An appointed time. That's kind of like a determined time, and we'll get to that here in just a minute. "Are not his days also like the days of an hireling?" In other words, they're short, right? You hire a hireling to work for you for a time, and he does his thing and fulfills his duty or whatever. They're short. That's our life. I'll get to that at the end of this sermon today. So we have an appointed time on this earth, and you will most certainly keep that appointment. You will. It's on God's calendar. He's not going to forget about it, and he's not going to let you either. And you won't be late for it. You know, there's people that say, I've heard this said, maybe you've heard this saying, that so-and-so will be late to his own funeral. You've heard that saying, right? People that are chronically late, they can't ever be on time for anything. He'd be even late to his own funeral. Actually, he won't. He'll be there right on time. He's not going to be fashionably late to that one. And by the way, fashionably late is called rudely late, by the way. Fashionably late, that irritates me. The number of our days are determined, and God has appointed bounds that we cannot pass. In Job chapter 14, just a few chapters to the right, Job 14 and verse 5, it says, "Seeing his days," talking about man, "seeing his days are determined, the number of his months are with thee, thou hast appointed his bounds that he cannot pass." Determined and bounds and appointed. You got three words there that tell us all the same thing, that God has fixed ahead of time how long you're going to live, at least the end point. You could check out early through stupidity, and I'll talk about that. But he set the end point. You're not going to go past the end point, no matter what you try. Determined means limited, restricted, as to extent, as to freedom of action or choice, conditioned, decided, settled, fixed, decided or resolved upon, appointed, ordained, fixed beforehand. So when you determine something, you're setting a limit, a restriction, a boundary on it. And he says there that his days are determined and has appointed his bounds that he cannot pass. A bound primarily is a landmark indicating the limit of an estate or territory. Now that was out of use in 1300. The next definition is the boundary line of a territory or estate. Generally, it's a limit or boundary that to which anything extends in space. Now, of course, this is a more physical, natural definition. We're speaking figuratively here when it comes to life, but the idea is the same. You have a boundary of your property. That's where your property line ends. That's where you have no right to go beyond. You're trespassing on somebody else's property when you go beyond the bound of your own, right? Well, God has set bounds and limits on the length of our lives. And you're never going to transgress that. Remember, we've already seen Ecclesiastes 8:8, that no man hath power over the spirit. You're not going to God set that outer bound, and you're not going to live past it. It won't be extended. Unless God decides to extend it. You know, King Hezekiah. King Hezekiah got news that he was going to die at a relatively young age, only 30, 39 or something like that. And he asked the Lord for more time, and the Lord gave him 15 years. But God can, you know, God can move the bounds if he wants, but you can't move the bounds, no matter what. Now, you may end your life early through suicide or foolish living, but you will never extend it beyond your determined time. So yeah, I do believe you can end it early, but you're not going to extend it past what God wants. In Job 30 in verse 23, Job referred to death, or the grave in other words, as the house appointed for all living. Job 30 in verse 23. It says, "For I know that thou wilt bring me to death and to the house appointed for all living." The house appointed for all living, I would say in context, is the grave. That's going to be your house. Every one of us is going to be brought to that house. It's been appointed to every living person. It's your resting home, I guess you could say, if you want to think about it that way. For the body, not for the soul and the spirit, but for the body until the resurrection. Now, God has determined the time of our lives. He set the bounds and limits on it. But nobody knows that time. Nobody knows when the time of his death is. In Ecclesiastes 9:12, we're told this. And it's a good thing. Can you imagine how insane this world would be if everybody knew the day that they were going to die? It'd be a madhouse, wouldn't it? I wouldn't want to live in a world where people knew when they were going to die. For the majority of people, there would be no more inheritance, that's for sure. People would blow it all. They'd spend the last penny on the last day that they died and not worry about anybody else. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 12 says, "For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them." We don't know our time. You don't know when that snare might catch you. You know, it might not. You don't know when you fall into that pit. It's known only by God. So we should therefore live each day as if it might be our last. That's a good way to live. We don't think about that until we hear a sermon about death and heaven, and then we think about it for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then we forget about it again until the next sermon. But we should, and I say we, because myself included, I don't do this either. I should, but, you know, I'm just human. We should live every day as if it was our last. And if you did that, you'd be a lot better person, wouldn't you? Now, on average, men live to be about 70 to 80 years old. Let's turn to Psalm 90 in verse 10. This is one of the reasons why I picked this as our morning scripture reading this morning. Psalm 90 in verse 10. Now there were different times throughout biblical world history. Men did live to different ages. You read about the people before the flood, Adam and Seth and Methuselah and Lamech and Noah and all those people. They lived, many of them, well up into their 900s. After the flood, things changed. Atmospheric conditions or who knows what. Something changed, obviously. Oxygen levels or, you know, there was some reason, I'm sure. Maybe the Lord just changed man's lifespan. I don't know. But after the flood, it started to dwindle off. But it didn't happen immediately. It wasn't like after the flood, people just lived to 70 to 80 years. Or even 120 years. People lived longer, and then you just look at the ages, and they slowly began to get closer and closer to that 70 to 80, and that's where we've leveled off at. But Abraham lived 175 years, I think. I think Isaac lived 180 years, right? So people were still living a long time, getting down, you know, to what is now normal. But now, and it's been this way for thousands of years, this was a prayer of Moses, the man of God. So this would have been written 1,500 years before Christ. Okay, so you're talking 3,500 years ago. People have been living 70 to 80 years. Don't listen to these liars out there that tell you that before modern medicine, people were, you know, average age was 40 or 35 or something. That is just a bald-faced lie. And the only reason they have that stupid statistic is because they include infant mortality in it. So you have a bunch of babies that die, and when you put those into the statistic, it brings the whole average way down. It's the dumbest thing. Just look at, when you read old books, read old, look at your hymnal. Go through your hymnal and look. And guess what? The majority of people live to be 70 to 80. It's always been that way. Now, granted, there were, you know, infections that could take you out when you were younger, and people did die. Individual people, once in a while, would die younger in those days. But on average, people have always lived 70 to 80 years, and they always will. And as a matter of fact, lifespan now, over the last couple of years, is going down. It had been inching up a little bit. It's now going down for the first time in, I don't know, decades. I forget how long. Now lifespan in America, anyway, is heading back the other way. Is it any wonder the way that people eat, the way that people are medicated with all these pharmaceuticals, you know, their whole lives, and no wonder lifespans are heading downward. But anyway, where was I? Psalm 90 and verse 10. It says, the days of our years are 70. That's 70. 70. 320s is 60 plus 10 is 70. And by reason of strength, they be 80. Yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. So 3,500 years ago, assuming, I mean, it says a prayer of Moses, so I'm assuming that Moses wrote this, if the superscription there is right on the Psalms. Even if Moses didn't write it, if it was the Psalm of David or something, you're still talking 3,000 years ago, roughly. So, you know, 3,000 years ago, people were living 70 to 80 years. And now with all of the advancements in technology and medicine, the average age in the U.S. is still like 77 or something like that. With everything that men have tried, they still haven't been able to get past that 80 on the average. So we should all number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. Because 70 to 80 years seems like a long time when you're Braden's age, right? When you're young, when you're in your 20s, 30s, you know, even 40s, 70 to 80, that seems like a long time. It's still quite a ways away. But you talk to anybody that's old. We got some in this room, they could tell you. You talk to some elderly people. I'm just being mean now. But anyway, talk to some older people, and they'll tell you it goes by very quickly. Let me just use your own experience. I'm 40 years old. 40 years has gone by really quickly. In some ways, it just seems like no time. Like, where in the world? How did I get to be 40 years old? And it's the same. I've been told it's the same way, whether you're 70 or 80 or 90. It's just, where did time go? It's just gone. Right? It goes by very, very quickly. Unless you're waiting at line at the DMV or something. But other than that, it goes by pretty quickly. Oh, turn with me to just down a couple of verses to Psalm 90 and verse 12. It says, so teach us to number our days. So he's saying this based on what he just said there, that our years are 70 to 80, and then we're cut off and fly away. So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Because, you know, you don't have that long. And the longer you live, the less time you have left. And so you want to number those days that you might apply your heart to wisdom. Wayne, you've got 1 year left, maybe. 70 years old, 1 year. You got 1 year. You could be dead and live a full life. You know that? David was said to be very old at 70 years old when he died. You got less than 1 year left. Number your days. Apply your hearts to wisdom. You got 2 years left. You got, what, 8 or something, right? Number your days, all of you, every one of you. Doesn't matter how old you are. You don't have that much time left. You better get serious about applying your hearts to wisdom. Look at Ephesians 5 and verse 16. Ephesians 5 and verse 16. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. Which kind of goes right along very well with what Moses said there in Psalm 90 and verse 10 when he said, yet is their strength, that's the strength of our years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow. You got 70 to 80 years and the strength of those years is labor and sorrow. And anybody that's lived a few years in this life can attest to that. There's some good times, there's some happy times, but there's plenty of sorrow. There's plenty of laborious times in this life. Redeem the time because the days are evil. And you know, another thing that applies to that days are evil, go read Ecclesiastes chapter 12 when Solomon says that seek thy Creator in the days of thy youth before the evil days come when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. Because once you get to be old, you get in your 70s and 80s, the evil days come upon you, your mind starts failing, you can't think like you used to, you can't do what you used to, your health is diminished, and you're not going to be able to apply your heart to wisdom anymore nearly as much. That's going to be greatly diminished because you're just not going to be, you're not going to have the cognitive ability, you're not going to be able to read as well, study as well, think as well, and you are going to turn into, if you live long enough, you're going to revert right back to being a child, basically, and your children are going to have to take care of you and tell you what to do and help you. I've seen it happen many times, and so have you. So apply your hearts to wisdom. You don't have that much time left. If you're in your 60s or above, you better be preparing yourself for death. You better be making provision for your loved ones who you will leave behind. Look at 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8 says, but if any provide not for his own and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. That's a serious charge, not providing for one's own. So men, do not leave your wives destitute after your death. You better be providing for them, for after you die. It is selfish and irresponsible to not leave your wife with enough money to take care of herself after your death. And I've seen this happen. I've seen preachers do this. I've seen preachers, I'm thinking of one in particular, die and leave his wife destitute, leave his wife with nothing. And that is reprehensible. Reprehensible. Men, your wives may outlive you by years or even decades. And I've seen it happen. My grandmother Wagner outlived my grandpa by almost 19 years. My grandma Beery has outlived my grandpa Beery by almost 28 years and counting. Your wife could outlive you by years or decades, and most women do. Most women outlive men by quite a number of years, because typically men get married later than women, so there's already an age gap, like Seth and I and other people. There's an age gap, and women live longer than men. So chances are men die, and then a woman lives another 5, 6, 8, 10, 20 years. Happens all the time. So you better make sure to leave her with as much money as possible to provide for her needs. Your responsibility, men, husbands, to provide for your wives doesn't end when you die. It ends when she dies. And that may be 20 years from now, 20 years from your death. Make arrangements for your funeral now. Make sure that you have either paid for your funeral ahead of time or that you at least have money set aside for it. I've talked about this in the death series, in the Facing Death series. You should set your house in order so that it will be as easy as possible on your loved ones after you're gone. Don't leave your kids or whoever a big mess. That's just terrible. And I'm sure we've all seen that one too. Either it's just a paperwork mess and you don't know where anything is and you don't know where to find anything and you don't know where all the information is for the bank accounts and the insurance policies and whatever else. Either it's just a mess like that or it's a physical mess, a house packed full of crap that somebody has to go through and deal with. Don't do that to somebody else. Get a will made, powers of attorney, and all those kind of things. Get rid of excess things you don't need. And there's a bunch of other things that I haven't included, I'm not going to talk about, but look at that Facing Death series. If you didn't do the things that I told you to back then, go back through it and do it now. Because life is short. Let's turn to Job 14 and verse 1. We're going to get to heaven here soon. I mean, talking about heaven here soon after the week after next, I think. But for now, you're going to have to get your toes stepped on again. I stepped on Carrie's toes this morning, literally, and then said, as a pastor, I'm used to stepping on people's toes, normally in a figurative sense. But so poor Carrie got her toes stepped on physically and literally this morning, so... Or physically, whatever. Yeah, physically and figuratively. There we go. Job 14 and verse 1. Man that is born of a woman, that's all of them in case you wondered. Man that is born of a woman is of few days and full of trouble. That verse right there pretty much sums up life, doesn't it? Few days and full of trouble. 70 to 80 years is few days in the big grand scheme of things, right? When you're looking at things like God looks at them, where a day is like 1,000 years and 1,000 years is like a day. Yeah, your 70 to 80 years down here is absolutely nothing. It's few days, but it's full of trouble. Psalm 89 and verse 47. Psalm 89 and verse 47 says, "Remember how short my time is. Wherefore hast thou made all men in vain?" Life kind of feels that way sometimes. It feels like it's vain, like it's just a big exercise in futility, doesn't it? You just read through the book of Ecclesiastes. That's what Solomon felt like. He just kept saying, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And Solomon tried everything, and he was rich, and he was wealthy, and he had all of the enjoyments and entertainments and all the things that you could ever ask for, and yet he still found it to be vain. Wherefore hast thou made all men in vain? Well, you know, there's an answer to that. God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions. See, God didn't make man in vain. God made man very good. Man sought out many inventions. Man sinned. Man brought this on himself. But our time is short, like the psalmist said there. The end of your life will be here before you know it. And for some of you, the end of your life will be here and you won't know it. You'll just die in your sleep, maybe. Happy for you. I've seen that happen too. I'm sure all of you have. I've known a number of people in my life who just died in their sleep. Never get to say goodbye. It's pretty sad. It's sad for us. Not sad for them. That's the easiest way ever to go, but it's sad for us. Our life on this earth is so short that it's called a vapor in James 4 and verse 14. James 4:14. It says, "Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away." Yep, someday when you're in heaven, and you've been there for, you know, a couple of thousand years, a couple of hundred thousand years or whatever, when you're there and you look back on the time that you spent on earth, it's going to be like you're looking at your cup of coffee, watching that steam come up off of there, and as soon as that steam disappears, that's about how long your little life was on earth. Your little 70 to 80 years is relatively nothing compared to eternity. So how important is it to focus on the things of heaven, to focus on the things of eternity when this life is so short and fleeting? You keep your eyes fixed on heaven. You keep your mind fixed and your affections fixed on things which are above, not on things which are on the earth. Because these things down here are temporal, but the things up there are eternal. I'll be talking about that for the next year or so. A vapor is matter in the form of a steamy or imperceptible exhalation, the form into which liquids are naturally converted by the action of a sufficient degree of heat. Imperceptible exhalation, like when you go out on a morning like this morning and you breathe and you see the steam come out and it's gone, right? A couple of seconds, that's your life right there. It says in Psalm 78 and verse 39 that it's like wind. Just here this moment and gone the next. Psalm 78 and verse 39. For he remembered that they were but flesh, a wind that passeth away and cometh not again. Just here for a moment. And all flesh soon withers like grass and fades like the flower. We're told this in Isaiah 40, verses 6 through 8. Isaiah 40 and verses 6 through 8. A voice said, cry. And he said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all the goodliness thereof is as the flower of the field. That's what I'm crying right now. I mean, I'm not really yelling, like, as far as that goes, but I am crying out to you in a sense, that telling you that your life is short. All flesh is grass, and as the goodliness thereof, and all the goodliness thereof is as the flower of the field. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, because the Spirit of the Lord bloweth upon it. That's when your appointed time comes. He blows upon it, you're gone. Surely the people is grass. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, but the word of our God shall stand forever. Yes, just like happens every fall, the grass withereth, the flower fadeth. You're just going to shrivel up and die one of these days, just like the plants you see out there. And soon you'll be cut off and you'll fly away. Let's go to Psalm 90 and verse 10 for the last verse for today. Psalm 90 and verse 10. Psalm 90 and verse 10, for the days of our years are 80 years and 10. And if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. The silver cord will be broke, and the golden bowl will be broken, and the silver cord will be loosed, and then our soul and spirit will fly away to our home in the heavens, and then someday we'll be rejoined with that body at the resurrection. So that takes care of the sermon today. I do want to sing, first song, I didn't tell you ahead of time, I'll Fly Away, number 363. But anyway, that takes care of today, and we will pick it up again next week, Lord willing.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.